I might have to take a step out, but I guess it doesn't matter if we can't get a hold of Homeboy.
Who are you talking to?
You?
Oh. Well, I said I had to get some coffee.
Yeah, I know. I can see you.
Oh, but I can't hear you because I don't have my Flight of the Navigator suit on.
I don't even know what that means, but it made me smile.
Sure.
You can't go back and you can't stand still. If the thunder don't get you, then the lightning will. The systems of monetary exchange and propaganda, the silly religions, the asinine aesthetic canons, very little of that can be saved.
Give me one reason.
Abandon cultural, Western cultural values.
In the beginning, they say Eve did it. They still sinning because they letting every Tom, Dick, and Steve get it. Therefore, I'm quick to not believe in it. Like the weed with the seeds in it. I proceed like a Jeep pimping. And some of the things you probably seen in your life made you think a certain kind of way about finding your wife or your better half. It's better to love and to hold than to never have it at all. And ball on the hole, make your stock go up. My Apple stock split, took a gamble harder that bought it, and now it's over six.
Hello.
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 Good morning. Hi, Mark. How are you this morning?
Morning. Nighttime, man. It's actually 6:42.
Hello.
Okay.
There we go. All right, we got a
How
whole
are
show.
You?
Hey, good.
Do I hear Alan in there?
Yeah, you hear me.
Okay, let me turn off some stuff so I can maximize my computing capacity.
Okay.
We are officially recording as of this minute forward.
And I am officially peeing for one little moment here, and then I'll be back and ready to go.
Will, how is this for you on time-wise? Is this okay?
Oh, yeah, this is fine.
Okay, cool.
I might piss off Andros Jones, but who cares?
Why is that?
Just because that's why I had contacted you. Doug wasn't answering me yesterday. I had forgot Mark's spatial placement. I had forgot he was in the UK. And so I wanted to make sure because I'd made the plan. I'm finishing up a video that I did with Andros again, and I had to talk to him about a little bit of the voiceover. So I said, well, let's talk tomorrow.
I
also told him if we didn't get the opportunity because weird stuff happens, then I would talk to him next week. So it doesn't matter, really.
Got you.
Hey, man, congratulations on getting the book out.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Early even.
Okay. Isn't that amazing how that happens?
Let's see.
Because you're that much of a badass. Well done, good sir.
Okay. I need to look at...
Yeah, I don't know if it makes me a badass. It just makes...
So how does it work? Like, is there a way to, readjust the book? Could you add something to the Sync Book 1? Like, because it's done by as the people order, right? The books are made as the people order. Is that correct?
Correct. Is this part of the show or?
Well, it's funny, I mean, you always do that to everyone, Will.
I just start talking, man. It's not planned.
I know, and they're like, wait, is this part of the interview?
I was just wondering, like on the Sync Book 1.
No,
if there was
that would
an
be blasphemous.
Mistake.
He could, but he'd have to order up a new. It would change things to resubmit the files.
Well, yeah, and what exactly? Actually, what would happen is it would mean that for about a week or so, there would be no way for anyone to order a copy of Sync Book 1. If I was making some sort of changes, the book would be unavailable for purchase for about a week, which is doable. It's not ideal, but it's doable.
You're unhappy with your submission, Will? Is this what you're getting at? You wanted to
not at all. That's not at all what
no,
I was thinking.
No, Will's chapter in the first sync book is perfect the way it is. It's really one of my favorite chapters in there, so.
Oh, stop.
No, really.
He needed that, too, so this is good.
Listen, no, for real, I really mean that, because there's a few different ways that, you know, these chapters sort of go. There's someone kind of expounding on their philosophy, which is interesting, but there's a sort of redundancy I feel sometimes in, like, someone saying, I think synchronicity shows everything's connected, and yay, and, you know, it's basically what I did, and that's what a lot of other people did. And it's interesting to get a little, I do feel like you get insight into something more specific about what someone was thinking. I mean, I learned a lot about what other people think based on how they wrote those. And yet, from a perspective of having, at this point, 52 authors do that, I feel like there's a certain amount of redundancy with small variation of saying, you know, well, yeah, okay, so I'm noticing all this, and this is what I get at it. This is the sort of philosophy that I've built out of it. It's interesting, but it comes down to heart, man. You know, like, that's really what it comes down to. There's also chapters where they present data. Those are also some of my favorite chapters, because it's just presenting something completely new. Hey, here's me laying out all this information, and it's like reading a really good blog post or something like that, or something like that. And then there are a few which I would consider Mark Golding's like that, and I'd consider yours like that, where it's just pure heart, and it's saying, this is how sync has touched my life. You know, forget philosophy for a minute, forget, you know, specific data points. This is how it actually affects me. And for me, that's something so beautiful that you can't get any other way.
All right. So that being said, Douglas, before I have any more editing to do.
Yes, it's interesting, because now Alan's reminded me about your chapter. And the thing that I like about your chapter, Will, is how you present a quantum universe. You at the beginning, how life is all about possibility. So everything's possible, but at some point you have to go down a path. Like,
yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. And so that becomes more of a classical world where you have to, you know, certainty, where at some point you can't do everything, and it drives, I think, a sinkhead crazy.
Sometimes, yeah.
To not be able
life,
to do.
Life is what happens while you're busy making other plans.
Yeah. Okay.
Sometimes things don't work out the way you want them to, or the way you were planning for them to.
I don't.
All right. So go ahead and if you've got the intro, then counting down would be a great idea.
Okay, just to make sure. Let's see. I've got my 42.
Do we have Mark on the line still?
Yeah.
Awesome. Good. Okay. So 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Messengers old and gray, and when he sets out to decay, and everything looks the same, nothing is there.
Sorry, Mark, go ahead. The spiritual...
So for want of a better word, the sync book, the three sync books are going to be a spiritual guide for those that wish to sort of follow a specific, you know, a wide-ranging path. But integrated within it are the sort of answers to all the sort of all spiritual seekers are seeking. Within this path, all their questions will be answered. Uh-huh. I truly, truly believe this is the equivalent of, you know, I'm hesitant to use the word, some sort of Bible for future travelers. I'm not saying this lightly either. Right. I've thought very deeply about the whole process, why I'm doing it and why we're doing it and why I've connected with you fellas. And it is, we're creating a new spiritual paradigm, and it could be that the launch of this second book serves to sort of heal people. They can gain deeper understandings, and it's a far bigger concept than I can almost handle, that somehow this is going to represent a new generation of spiritual understanding for those that, you know, want to follow a new sort of path, but based in old histories. But never before has such a book been compiled. I'm sure this is the first time in the history of mankind that such a task has been undertaken. And it's, you know, that Alan's kind of held it together and done it. You know, in years to come, this could be a world-changing series of essays. I'm not saying it's lightly.
Well, I'm going to make light of it, though, as a wink, though. The first two books both have movie associations. So the first one was associated with The Monolith in 2001. And this new one, Sync Book 2, is kind of a... You know, it's room 237. It's the moon room that we're talking about. And this morning I was thinking, oh man, could Sync Book 3 not be so heavy? Maybe it should be like the Monty Python Holy Grail book. But then, it's funny because if it's the Holy Grail, it's exactly what you're saying, Mark.
Well, it could be, couldn't it? It could be. We won't know till it's actually out there and right. How people.
But
do
like
it.
The whole path, you know, where you. You in the garden discover the enlightenment, and then you have to face the shadow that you've discovered in the garden, and then you reach the Holy Grail.
I think it's in there. I've no doubt that history will sort of tell a completely different story about this book when it comes out. You know, I'm kind of off with the fairies a little bit about this, but I know what's coming as far as this is concerned. Mm. And it's going to heal and help so many people. This is a deeper work of magic as I could have conceived, let alone been part of. I know what's coming as a result of this. I've kind of visioned very deeply about the sort of progression of this kind of process. And, you know, maybe you know, but the whole reason I kind of got connected was through Justin Morgan. I sort of, I might have told you before, but I saw months before I'd heard of synchromysticism, I'd sort of bumped into one of Justin's pictures, and it was of Buddha, like in a sort of fractal ayahuasca-y type background. And I thought, whoever's done this book is really knows his stuff. And then it turns out that he was part of this. And that's what linked me in to wanting to be involved was Justin. You know, I can't sing his praises high enough, that man. He's one of the most remarkable men I've ever met, or not met as it comes. But we are actually sort of toying around with an idea of meeting up in Germany next year for the World Beard and Moustache Championships.
That's so great.
And sort of sit around and drink beer and kind of shoot the breeze with all these other guys with big beards. So we've sort of tentatively talked around meeting somewhere, Munich or somewhere, you know, next summer. So, you know, it's just a remarkable story, you know, men with beards.
That brings me to something. I mean, so for Equal Time, we were talking to Winnipeg, then we talked to Justin, and, you know, you just mentioned moments before, Alan, psychedelic, and then Mark described Justin's artwork as, you know, ayahuasca influenced. But this is a curiosity to me, because recently Alan introduced me to an alchemical figure known as the Baker. And so it's impossible to not consider the Baker as also a possible psychedelic substance, maybe, you know, if that's the dark...
the baking of the bread or the Amanita muscaria.
Right. You could even take that as, you know, there is the whole grain connection. I mean, there's, if we want to get technical, I mean, there's this idea of ergotized grain, like whether that's rye, where there have been many historical points where this ergot grows on the grain, and then like entire villages start to experience psychedelic, in a sense, sickness because they weren't expecting it. And just all this sort of stuff. But there's definitely a connection there between the grain and the psychedelia. I mean, actually, from the way I got started into a lot of this synchronicity stuff was I sort of zeroed in on this one grain aspect. I mean, it's so weird. Like, everyone has their sink. But my sink was definitely agricultural. And, of course, this connects to, like, Saturn and Osiris, you know, this sort of lord of the grain. And that's why I'm so fixated on the king kill is not any morbid or maybe some slightly morbid fixation, but just this idea of these were the sync trails that I've been following since day one, was this weird grain equals death thing. And then it was like, oh, okay, well, that's because there actually is a mythological correspondence to that, and followed a little further. And I definitely think that's a big part of the step. But.
Well, one of the main functions of a complete mythology is to teach the people living under it how to die. And I don't know if we have that. And so perhaps that's why, you know, there's this need to know how to die. Harry Potter does it.
Well, it you know, I've been studying, practicing Buddhism for, you know, 20 odd years now, and the sort of the highest essence of Buddhism, or Dharma as it's called, is a practice of the highest yoga tantra. And the whole essence of tantra, you know, it can be sort of facilitated as an orgasm, but it's actually visualizing the journey through death. So when one does sort of tantric meditations according to the sort of ancient traditions, one closes one's eyes and goes through a living facsimile of the death process. So every time one does a tantric meditation, one practices dying, and it kind of creates a tendency, as I understand it, within the mind. So one is prepared for death. One knows how to let go at the time of death. And I had a very interesting experience on the night before the transit of Venus. I was over at Samantha's house, and it was funny, as you know, Alan, you called me in the morning. It was a strange night. We went to bed about midnight and set the alarm clock for 5 in the morning because we wanted to get up at, you know, 5 and go up to the woods and watch the dawn, catch this transit of Venus and, you know, healing in the woods. And during the course of the night, I had the most powerful dream of my life. And the dream went like this. I was walking over a hill, and I came over the crown of the hill, and I looked in front of me, and I was sort of in my dream, I was heading towards a village or a town or a city. And as I came over the brow of the city, brow of the hill, I looked down into the valley where the town was, and it was completely covered in water. And I kind of, you know, in my dream state, I thought, oh, it's a bit strange. It's all flooded. Well, that's kind of a little bit unusual. And then in the far horizon, I noticed a sort of line appearing, and I realized instantly that this was a tsunami. You know, what I knew it was a tsunami, and I saw this kind of line rising on the horizon. And I thought, I've got to turn around and I've got to run. I've got to get out of this situation. So in my dream, I turned around through 180 degrees to run in the opposite direction. And as I turned, I noticed on the other horizon, the 180 degree horizon, another tsunami coming towards me. And I realized in the dream that there was absolutely nothing I could do to protect myself. So in that moment of realizing these two towering waves were coming upon me, I decided the only thing I could do was completely surrender my physicality and allow myself to be not moved, to find the sweet spot and thereby not be affected physically by these crashing waves. And at that point, I woke up from the dream. As the waves came on me, I surrendered my physicality and I launched out of the dream like a champagne cork coming out, and I sat bolt upright in bed like a champagne cork. And to me, this was a very direct correlation with the awakening from the dream. So as we probably all know, that sort of there's this kind of meme that the world we inhabit has a dreamlike quality. And once we awaken from this 3D dream, we are, you know, enlightened or whatever. So this was an indication to me that if things got seriously tricky, one could rescind to this understanding, relax from the physicality, and the dream, and that process would awaken one from the dream. And this was so powerful because it correlated with an experience I had a few months before that I've told Alan about. I met a guy that was in the big earthquake in Christchurch in New Zealand a year or two back.
Yeah.
And he was an artist and he lived on top of his studio, a sort of two-story building, and the earthquake hit in the middle of the night and he was thrown in his underpants and his building crashed down. He lost everything. He injured his back. And when he turned around in the morning and looked at the remnants of his building, there was a bit of wall still standing, and a bit of the first floor, what we call the first floor, what we in England call the first floor, you know, so there's a bit of floor still hanging above off a wall, and on top of the wall was a cabinet, and on top of the cabinet were three drinking glasses that his mother had given to him. And these three drinking glasses, amidst the complete chaos and destruction without the city, these three drinking glasses hadn't moved a millimeter. So this was the equivalent of finding the sweet spot amongst the cacophony, and somehow these weren't affected by the movement, by the waves, by the massive energies. And somehow this correlated to my experience of these waves coming in on top of me in a series that kind of convinced me and reassured me that the ability to awaken from the dream and find the sweet spot when we're in our death throes or when we're in our sort of primal fears, if we have some understanding and some experience of our sweet spot, we can awaken from that dream, which is enlightenment as I understand it.
Wow. I'm speechless.
Yeah. I think there's something, you know, while you were talking, I don't want to get bogged down in sort of technicalities, but something that I think I've sort of come to is this, I'm trying to find a way to say this without just, I'm just going to say it. So it's this sort of in and out, up and down, you know. So if, of course there's this sexual component, but you know, if we take this to a sort of yogic practice, it's the same thing. And Doug has this idea of the, you know, he became really fixated with the idea of the labyrinth, which is why he wrote The Winter's Labyrinth. And of course, this was something that Doug and I found, was that there is the sweet spot, but you can't live there. This, if this makes sense, is sort of like, I have this, you know, stupid fortune cookie on my wall, which says something like, you know, a ship is safe in a port, but that's not why a ship was built. That's sort of what, but that kind of summarizes what I'm saying. It's like, I definitely understand Mark, like way, way, way understand you, because when I first met my wife, I was sort of at this height of my, I would say probably the height of my conspiracy stuff, and sort of maybe just starting to segue out of that. But there was all this paranoia, all this anxiety. I had just been in the hospital a few months before. All these things were sort of happening. And when I met my wife, I had this dream where there was this total, like, storm. I mean, like, cyclones, crazy swirling chaotic mass around me, and we just sort of met each other and we just held each other in the middle, and like it's sort of that eye of the hurricane or something where it's like we were safe in that one spot while all the swirling madness was around us, and it was that sweet spot. So I definitely understand what you're saying there, and yet from this other I hope I'm not presenting a contradiction here, but there is also seems to me this something idea of people are able to get lost in finding a spot. I guess the way to truly find that spot is to maintain balance. Yeah, you know, but I think there is a chance that some people confuse that. And I'm not suggesting that's what's happening to you. I'm saying there's this sort of safety, or sometimes safety in a belief system, or safety in a that there are no hardships or whatever it is. Sometimes I feel like people search for a safe spot and then stay there. And very often to me, seems like the safe spot is not actually the safe spot. It's not actually the sweet spot. It's not
The safe spot is not the sweet spot. The sweet spot is actually a little dangerous, or else it wouldn't be so sweet.
Exactly. Thank you. That's exactly what I'm getting at. You know, Doug's thing is that the labyrinth is you go in, you touch center, and then you come back out. You know, we've been making these references to The Shining. Look, Jack gets lost in The Shining. And how does Danny get out? He has to walk backwards. He has to find his way back out by walking backwards the way he came, whereas Jack gets lost there. So it's this idea of, you know, we want to talk about the art of dying, what Mark was talking about, what my book is largely about, and I think this is hugely important. But you don't practice reaching one state. I feel like it's learning to experience all states and this sort of integrating each of those levels. So I definitely think the sweet spot is not necessarily the safe spot. The safe spot, to me, seems like it's very often a place that you get stuck.
Yeah, I think there's potential to get stuck there. For some people, there might be the potential to get stuck there. But it depends, I guess, upon one's instructions one follows, or one's intuition one follows. And as I understand it, when the goal is achieved, one can walk or live or be between both worlds, the spiritual and physical world, and be in balance between the two at all times forevermore. That to me is the definition of enlightenment, which of course I haven't realized, I haven't achieved, but that to me is what enlightenment is to be able to recognize the true nature of all reality as being entirely in relationship with the mind, whilst maintaining a blissful presence within both. So how else do the great teachers teach? You know, they teach through the physicality, but they teach from that harmony, that balance they've found within, between the inner and the outer. That's the path, I think. That's the path as it presents itself to me. And so sort of finding the sweet spot itself is all right, but it has to be permanent. But that takes a degradation and a breaking down of all the sort of the mental, all the things that we've been taught, all the wrong things we've been taught, all the sort of debris that we have to lug around inside our consciousnesses. And so to me, that is nourishment, and that's what sustains me on my journey through this life. And as such, it's kind of, I'm quite happy to walk along that path. It's good for me, you know.
Oh, yeah. Mark, I think you're a perfect example. I guess the reason I was trying to clarify here is that I come from the sort of Chinese perspective of, you know, change is the constant. You know, it's not that. So when you say there's a permanence, you hope to reach that state and maintain that. Yes, but change is the constant. So you have to find a way to exist there within that flow. So for you, you're not sitting in a monastery safe and just meditating all day. You're actually out and interacting with your world. You're interacting with people, and you're interacting with your environment. You, as the story you tell in your book, is like you're doing dangerous things. You're doing dangerous work to fully integrate yourself. So you're both taking the physical risk. You're taking the that sort of physicality and merging it with the spiritual. And this is how you find that balance, rather than someone. I guess what I was trying to get at was like, you know, that the sweet spot is not, I'm going to sit in a monastery or an ashram or this, you know, just temple of choice, and okay, just sit here and contemplate the mysteries of the universe for the rest of your life, because that's not really a life. The sweet spot is finding a way to balance the physical and spiritual in an actual existence.
Yeah, that's it, Alan. And, you know, much of my life, when I put myself into these situations, you know, I went to this fantastic party on Saturday night, and I kind of didn't want to go, but, you know, I've kind of got too much to do. Great party, but it's almost like that's part of my training. Part of my training is to go to places where there's lots of people sometimes. Sometimes I'm solo and isolated, but go to places where there's all this dissonance, all this kind of all this noise and dance and, you know, all the craziness that happens in a party, and somehow navigate through that cacophony, even though it's kind of quite sweet, but it's quite a disturbing energetic on one level. But to be able to walk through that and maintain in that sort of, in that cacophony, is part of my training. And I'm not sort of, you know, I do like to have fun as well, but this is part of how I want to do it. I need to learn how to assimilate the difficult parts and the easy parts. It's very easy to lie down on my bed and close my eyes and think I'm doing something. But to be able to walk in the world and do it takes a sort of, one has to build up a sort of resilience or a sort of a practice whereby one's able to do it. And it's like learning a language, I guess. One has to sort of keep doing it to gain some mastery or some recognition or understanding of what is one's spiritual path. Whichever, you know, flicks any of our switches is good. No contradiction in paths, I don't feel.
One of the interesting things that I notice is when we have a discussion like this, speaking about purpose, all we can do is point, because that's what our language does. But then also it seems like that there's two, like there's the psychological death that we're speaking about, because at some point, you know, the ego is, it's like our spacesuit, and it's really important because it keeps us alive. But if we only connect to that physical survival, then we have an empty life, because, you know, it's a life of survival. It's not necessarily living. So, you know, that's the ego death, where you take on a transpersonal center, where you're living for something bigger than your survival. So there's that, but then there's also our physical death, that, you know, the inevitable physical death that we all face. It's like, so there's like these two deaths that are one death, but they're, you know, it's just interesting to me that sometimes we get lost in the language of the conversation in terms of metaphor.
Oh, yeah. But I think that's also why, like what Mark was talking about before, is called like the art of dying. And a lot of these teachers will say, you know, the art of dying, learning the art of lying, learning the art of dying is as important as the art of living. And the idea is that the reason you would have to practice it through metaphor and pointing is this way you're ready for it when it actually comes. Or perhaps what you're getting at is how we often dance this line between, is the metaphor actually literal, or is the literal actually metaphor?
Well, yeah. Here's the little phrase that has come up to me. If you can die before you have to die, then you don't have to die when you die.
Hey, Doug, what episode is this?
I can dig that, Doug. That's it, isn't it? When I die, when we die, when I die, I don't want to be wrenched from my body kicking and screaming. I don't want to be holding on out of fear of letting go, because that's what I feel. If I don't contemplate and I get some understanding of what the death process is, when the sort of moment of inevitability clicks into my consciousness, that's it, mate. You know, this is it. Now's your time. When that moment comes, I want to be able to have an understanding in my consciousness that it's like, let go of the physical. Let go of the physical. What is the relationship of my mind to my physical? So when that point is reached, I can recognize the connectivity of consciousness and physicality, and let go of the physicality and process into the next thing, whatever it is. I don't have an answer to that. But unless I practice it now, when it's time to do it, you know, it could be a very, very disturbing experience, and I don't want a very disturbing experience. I want to sort of get some understanding of it now. So even if that's a facsimile of the death process, it's kind of serves me to sort of, okay, well, I've kind of got an idea of an exit route from this, to awaken from the dream using the metaphors, the dream metaphors and the metaphor of the glass on the cabinet. And if somehow they serve me in a process whereby I can find a sweet spot, or I can pop out, awaken from the dream, letting go of the physicality, if that serves me to have a pain or a less anxious death process, it's going to serve me well. But I don't know, because I'm not there yet. But it's worth considering, from my perspective, it's worth considering. And it, maybe other people don't feel so, but it's sort of, you know, one kind of has to work on oneself primarily, I suppose.
Gentlemen, I apologize, but I have to leave now.
That's okay. I think
we all have to die sometime, Will.
Going now, Will, are you?
It's been a real pleasure knowing you, though.
Mark, your art is amazing. I enjoyed looking at it this morning. I enjoyed talking to you, and I am astounded at how pretty it is on the Sync Books cover.
Okay, just before we go, may I make a little, if you go to the page where my art is, it's called, and I only did this for the first time myself yesterday. I've never done this, and I actually mentioned it to Justin and someone else today. Is if you go to my art page, the Healing Magic page, and scroll right down to the bottom of the page. It'll take a while for the page to reboot. Scroll right down to the very, very bottom of the page, the very first drawing, and then hit the up scroll and watch from the first picture right through. You don't have to pause it. You can just scroll up and watch it. There's something really special starts to happen. You know, and I'm not trying to lay anything on you, but I'm suggesting you go to the Healing Magic page, go right to the very bottom, and then scroll up the page, and then you'll follow my journey that I've described to you as it's been elucidated on the page. My journey, you know, there's a couple of little sort of funny little pictures along the way, but just scroll up through and you will see, you'll witness my expression of my desire for enlightenment. You'll see as it manifests through the journey.
Could you?
I've never, you know, last night was the first time I did it, and I was sort of, even I was surprised by the sort of effect it had on me. So if you guys would do me the honor of doing that, and just anyway,
the Healing Magic page, what's the URL?
It's just on Facebook.
You can find it. You could find it at tinyurl.com/healingmagic.
Yeah, that's where all my drawings are, and some of the photographs of my journey of the past 18 months. It just records where it started, journeying through Stonehenge, up through Glastonbury, into the woods and into the drawings. And it's like a little movie of my life of the past 18 months or so, but primarily based on the drawings. And there's a sort of way the drawings almost, as they sort of, the drawings go through the sort of pixels of the screen, they sort of, they a sort of vibrancy, a sort of a shift of energy starts happening. And well, try it and see what you think, and I'd be honored if you would, and you know, see what you think.
Okay, and we'll do that. And then when Will and I start getting into this book, we're going to have you back on, and we'll actually talk about your piece. So like today, we wanted to honor what you've done for the actual design of the book, because the object itself is so beautiful. But then we'll definitely dig into your piece, and we'll have you back.
Right. Lovely, fellas. All right. Have a lovely day.
You too. Thank you so much.
Mark, can I just take this moment? Mark, thank you so, so much. I'm so glad. I'm so honored that you contributed what you did to this book. Thank you. And thank you, boys, for having us on today. I really appreciate it. Doug and Will, all you've done over the last year for this. I appreciate everything very much.
Well, I'm happy that this whale's eating you, Alan. I mean, Ahab.
Wow. Okay. Bye, guys. Take it easy.
All right, bye.
Woke up in the soup, I guess it's time to face the pooper. Sometimes I feel like Superman, sometimes I'm just recuperating. Yeah. My head is twisting in its cage, my mind feels like a 20 gauge. Hope it's just a passing stage, my heart's not ready, spacious. Days like this that burn me, turn me inside out and learn me.
Try to tell you all about it, thought you might have heard, I doubt it. Every day's a waste, I know, and every day's a funeral. Cut down, I'm feeling lost, lost my mind, I'm Mr. Frost. Collected all the evidence, I'm off the edge, I'm on the fence. It's days like this that burn me, turn me inside out and learn me. Not to tell you anything, I think I know, but I think I'll tell you all that I know. Don't wanna be alone, I wanna be a stone. I wanna sink to the bottom of the ocean, lie there with you till I'm gone. At the bottom of the big blue sea, just you and me. At the bottom of the big blue sea. At the bottom of the big blue sea, just you and me.
Not an unsolved problem for scientists or sociologists. The world is a living mystery. Our birth, our death, our being in the moment, these are mysteries.
I know I never know nobody better than I know myself, but I can't even figure out just what the fuck I'm all about. I'm sinking, I'm swimming, wait a minute, I'm drowning, I ain't kidding around. Sometimes I think I'm gonna make it, sometimes I'm faking. And it's days like this that burn me, turn me inside out and learn me. Not to tell you anything, I think I know, but I think I'll tell you all that I know. Anyway, I've never when made up my mind, it's getting weird, it's quit thinking. Might not get much better than the day I fear. Won't know true happiness, I tried so hard, I did my best, but best wasn't good enough, I gotta hate this stuff. And it's days like this that burn me, turn me inside out and learn me. Not to tell you anything, I think I know, but I think I'll tell you all that I know. I don't wanna be alone, I wanna be a stone. I wanna sink to the bottom of the ocean. Lie there with you, lie there with you till I'm gone. At the bottom of the big blue sea, just you and me. The bottom of the big blue sea.
If we could train ourselves simply to pay attention to our ordinary states of consciousness as we live through our days and nights, culture is a mass hallucination.
Since it's like this to burn, turn the inside out and burn. It's just like this that burn me, turn me inside out and learn. It's just like this that burn me, turn me inside out and learn. Not to tell you anything, I think I know.